Welcome back to the Smoking Steak Podcast. This is episode 83 of the only English language podcast all about Brazilian football. I'm your host, Peter, joined as always by Enric. We've got a nice little show for you guys. We're going to talk little transfers, talk about the state leagues, and then, of course, the pre-Olympico tournament as well going on right now. Brazil just concluded a match, actually, beating Venezuela 2-1. And we'll end with the weirdest topic of the day, the blue cards being trialed in some leagues around the world. But before all that, let's say hi to Enric. Enric, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. Everything has been fine as usual. We're here talking about Brazilian matches, not Brasileirão. We're not there yet. We are halfway through the state championships, so things are running well for that and for our club. So hopefully in the coming weeks we're going to be aware of who is going to be the champion of those state championships, and maybe and hopefully a different champion compared to what we saw last year.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we just dive into all the action in Brazil, I want to start off with a story, and I actually haven't started off with a story since that episode about the week of the zebra. So if you're curious about why a zebra is used as the icon of an underdog win in Brazil, go back, listen to that episode. I don't know what number it is, but it's, I believe, it's episode 32, Week of the Zebra. But I want to start talking today with Leandro Damião, big time striker back in the around 2010, won Libertadores with Internacional, won Recopa as well. Really great striker for Inter. And in 2014, he was the most expensive signing other than Tevez, and the most expensive Brazilian player ever signed in the Brasileirão. Signed by Santos, some of that Neymar money getting into use there. And he signed for Santos and scored some goals, but the fans really disliked him. He did not score as many as you'd think. He missed way more than he scored. Didn't seem to be working all that hard, was super slow, and just kind of became a whipping boy for the Santos team of that era. And all this money, 41 and a half million reais, down the drain. He went out on loan about a million times, finally found a home in Japan where he's been ever since. And that is up until today, where he just, the news just broke. Curitiba is the new employer of Leandro Damião. Really interesting signing, and that does mean that Santos is going to come into conflict with him in Serie B this upcoming season. But the reason why I bring this up is because recently we also had another record-breaking signing, Luis Henrique, coming into Botafogo to the Brasileirão from La Liga, Real Betis, selling him for a record-breaking 20 million euros. I think it's 16 million guaranteed plus four bonus. The most expensive ever transfer coming into the Brasileirão. So very exciting news. But I bring up Damião because you never know what you're going to get with these big, huge money signings. I mean, you think about Neymar going to PSG. You think about Coutinho going to Barcelona. Dembele going to Barcelona. You never know what you're going to get. And with so much money involved, there's going to be real big expectations that are just almost never going to be met. And I just want to preface that by, or preface the Luis Henrique talk with saying that, because I think he's going to be successful. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, but I really don't want to see what happened to Demiao, happened to Luis Enrique. All this expectation because of the price tag, all this talk because of the historical nature of the price tag. And when he doesn't score 10 million goals in the first 10 games, people get on his ass and things like that. So I just wanted to tell that story and to open up the conversation about Luis Enrique with that. So Enric, curious to hear your thoughts on this record-breaking transfer.
Yeah, Peter, you mentioned two really cool players that played in a different time of their career. Leandro Damião, of course, a player that we remember from 2010, 2011, mostly with Internacional, and mentioning him alongside Neymar brings back when Santos played Inter in the Libertadores. Who can forget that goal that Neymar had against Inter? And actually, he scored a hat trick. And Inter lost 3-1. Their only goal was scored by Leandro Damião. And Leandro Damião was also called up to the national team, I believe, in 2013. So I can't say he had a bad season with the Seleção, but of course, he could have provided more. And as you mentioned, he could have scored more for Santos. I was excited when he came in 2014. But again, as you just said, only 11 goals and probably 40 or 50 appearances is nothing that we expected. And yeah, he's been all over Brazil after that. He played for Flamengo from 2016 to 17, went back to Internacional, especially in the 2018 year where he was able to score 10 goals. But ever since then, playing in Japan, it just marked the end of his career. So hopefully, with Coritiba in the second division, he's going to find his form. And who knows, maybe he's going to turn it on into a Nene for Vasco da Gama that promoted that club 2 years ago in Serie A, because I really think that Brazilian players struggle in states or countries other than Brazil, but when they actually return at some point, they do magic. So hopefully, again, he can play his best football and bring us fans some exciting memories back of us remind or watching him play. Also, going over Luis Enrique, a signing that I did not expect a player of his capability from Real Betis to move to Botafogo. I understand that it's only going to be a 6 month loan, but even the club he's moving to after doesn't convince me. Lyon, a team that has been struggling in the French league, I'm not sure why he moved there. Same thing that I could say about Bruno Guimarães and Paquetá that played at Lyon. I feel like any team other than PSG in or Marseille in France is not important. So those players are playing a huge risk into their career by doing that. But hopefully when he plays in Botafogo and then Lyon, maybe a Premier League club can catch him. So yes, it's going to be an exciting transfer news for Botafogo fans. And yeah, hopefully he can help them win Brasileirão and not do what the team did last season. Despite the team has been struggling just like last season, conceding late winners and things that we're going to be talking about on this podcast.
Yeah, and I'm not one to defend Ligue 1 or teams in Ligue 1 at all. I don't think Lyon, I mean, Lyon, one of the most prestigious and historic clubs in France. Yes, they've had a little bit of trouble recently, but definitely, I think it's a great club. And one of the reasons I think people are moving there, Brazilians are moving there, they saw the success of a player like Bruno Guimarães, excuse me, moving from Brazil to France, using that Olympique Lyonnais club as a launch pad to a top three league in Europe. Guimarães obviously going to France, or excuse me, England, with Newcastle. But yeah, and also to clarify, Luis Enrique, there's much speculation, and of course this is a deal between two Eagle football clubs. That's John Textor's footballing group, containing Crystal Palace, Botafogo, Lyon, club in Belgium that I'm the name escapes me right now. But a lot of speculation that this could be a backdoor move to Lyon. But I do believe they've come out and said there's no loan clause. There's no I think it is a permanent deal, at least on paper. Now, of course, he does have that backdoor to Lyon. And that's kind of the speculation of how he's going to go back to Europe. But I think they've said that he's more or less guaranteed to stay in Brazil for at least a year. And I do also believe that unless they get knocked out early in Libertadores, I think that he's pretty much, I think that there's a good chance that they actually mean what they say. And I'm with you. I mean, a player of immense quality. I think he didn't pan out in Europe as a lot of people thought when he went from Fluminense to Real Betis. But tremendous quality. We saw his debut last night. Very direct player. Really, really going to be contributing assists, maybe a few goals. But again, I just urge patience. And he's not going to be a Neymar level talent, despite his hefty price tag. So I'm excited to see what he can do. He's rocking the number 99, which I guess is a tribute to Ronaldinho, apparently, is what he's come out and said. And it's been really cool to see him. I guess his grandma is a Botafogo supporter as well. So very cool to see someone who was raised as a Fluminense academy grad go to an arch rival Botafogo. So cool to see. And yeah, we'll see where he ends up as far as Lyon and Botafogo and exactly what, if any, backroom deals have been done. But it's been kind of a part of a overall really big window for Brazilian teams. I think they were listed as the third most amount of money spent in the January transfer window in terms of a league, which does make a lot of sense. They've spent a lot of money, and basically no other league has spent any money. Looking at it, it's like a ninth of what it usually is in terms of money spent. So the rest of the route is getting up there. And it's getting a little buzz on the international marketplace. But Enric, let's get down into the football now. We're going to talk about the state leagues, but we had the first trophy of the season awarded. The Brazilian Super Cup took place in Belo Horizonte. The winners of the league, Palmeiras, faced off against São Paulo, the winners of the Copa do Brasil. And it was goalless. Went to a penalty shootout, where São Paulo eventually claimed the trophy. Any thoughts on this game?
Well, of course, it's the Brazilian Super Cup. Two big teams in Brazil match against each other, one of them being Brasileirão champs, Palmeiras, and the other one with São Paulo winning the Copa do Brasil with a new coach now, Diego Carpini. So coming into this game, we didn't really know what to expect from these two clubs. Both have been good in the Campeonato Paulista, but São Paulo is slightly better, and I think they showed how better they were against Palmeiras in this important match, just like how they won against them in Copa do Brasil when they eliminated the Verdão. They came up to this game and played a nil-nil game, hoping that in penalty kicks it's going to turn on in their favor. I believe, I don't know if you how you saw this match, but I thought that São Paulo played really well against a Palmeiras side that has been one of the best teams in the continent over the past 4 or 5 years. So São Paulo fighting and fighting, the goals didn't come, and the same thing can be said about Palmeiras. They also had their opportunities but couldn't score against Rafael, who in my opinion is going to be one of the best keepers in Brazil in 2024. So it all mattered, it all came to penalty shootouts at the end. So Palmeiras, I believe, missed two of them, and São Paulo came out victorious. So another trophy in São Paulo's cabinet. I think one of the biggest clubs in São Paulo and in Brazil, I think they absolutely deserved it. And yeah, that's how the game ended. São Paulo winning this match against Palmeiras. So Palmeiras has been a struggling team, just like we mentioned with Rodrigo Lazzarini in our last episode. A team that has been conceding goals a lot in the Paulista. They didn't concede any here, but when it came to penalty kicks, Weverton, I don't think he did the job well. A keeper that has been at Palmeiras for so many years, maybe this would mean that they need to look at someone else, someone that is young and can have their chances, but not starting every match. So they need to integrate signings and young players into that goalkeeper position. in order to replace Weverton, because Weverton is getting to that age when he can just simply retire. And their second keeper, I forget his name, he has been at Palmeiras for so many years, he's even older than Weverton, so they need to find that out and hopefully replace him in the future.
Wow, I didn't even know that. But yeah, I like to echo pretty much everything you said. I mean, I thought Palmeiras was maybe the better team. They're of course without Endrick, who's at the pre-Olympic tournament. But in the end, São Paulo get the job done in the penalty shootout. Piqueires and Murillo, the two players that had their shots saved by Rafael. And I always think back to our episode with Alexandre Geisbrecht, São Paulo expert, talking about the need for a new goalkeeper. That was almost 2 years ago. And they have definitely found one with Rafael. Two saves there, guaranteeing them the win. Also, Juliano Galoppo back in action. He got injured pretty horribly last year and missed a bunch of time. Really importantly, São Paulo also this with this trophy win, they've now won pretty much every major trophy that they've competed for. There's always some, weirdness of national trophies and continental trophies that, existed for 2, 3 years back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Very disorganized time for the continent and Brazil. But pretty much every major tournament that they've played in, they have now won. Which is just incredible. They've done it. They've completed all the Infinity Stones, and they are definitely one of the most prestigious teams in Brazil. Of course, still never relegated, along with Flamengo, and they've literally won it all. So São Paulo again, looking like a great team. Carpini as well. Love the manager coming in and doing a great job. All right, so. Paulista, it is well underway. 6 match weeks have gone by, and we're kind of getting to know some of these teams. And again, these aren't the fully formed teams. There'll definitely be some coaching changes. And this form in this competition and state competition in general don't always, they're not the best indicators of how they're going to do in the season. But that is no cause for comfort if you're a Corinthians fan. Corinthians have been stinking it up. They've lost 5 matches in a row, including going down at home to Novo Horizontino and eventually losing 3-1. Mano Menezes, of course, has been fired. They're still looking for a coach. It's not official yet, but just a complete dumpster fire. Yeah, I don't really know where they go from here. Henrik, do you?
I have no idea either, Peter. I mean, you look at their team, the way how they have been playing since we started this podcast in 2022. Every season, they win a couple of games in the beginning and then keep struggling and struggling and struggling until they find themselves either in the relegation zone or fighting against the relegation zone. And if they continue to play with fire, I bet you they're going to end up like Santos in a year or two, struggling, because this is exactly how Santos' downfall began after Libertadores, struggling in the Paulista, but they were fine with it. It happened again the next year and the next year until we started struggling with the Serie A, and battled through that and went to the second division. So Corinthians fans got to be very careful there. I feel bad, despite them being one of our huge rivals, and I see them as the hugest rivals alongside Palmeiras. I don't view Palme or São Paulo or Red Bull Bragantino as a really rival team. I have nothing against their fans and their squads, but again, Corinthians, they are struggling. They don't have their goalkeeper again, just like Palmeiras. Cássio needs to change. They need to bring on someone new. Defenders haven't been promising, especially Fagner on the right, just like we saw him throughout last season. Midfield, they've sold basically some of their players, like Juliano, a player that was crucial in their team. And then in the attack, you have someone like Yuri Alberto, not confident, a player that struggled in Europe, keeps struggling in Corinthians, and ever since Roger Goodell left that team, it seems like everything has been turned into shit, and the team doesn't seem like it's going to get back to track anytime soon.
Yeah, and you mentioned Yuri Alberto. I think we mentioned either with our last interview with Rodrigo Lazzarini or the interview before that, Mano Menezes, one of his last acts was actually calling Yuri Alberto an ass. I think it was unintentionally recorded, and people are all over Yuri about this. In Santos's big win over Corinthians in the Derby just yesterday, chants of the Portuguese word for ass were ringing out constantly when the former Santos man came onto the field, and he skied a chance as well, and the crowd loved that. So he's definitely in his own head. Pedro Raul made his debut as well. He hasn't really seemed like he's fit in or looked all that dangerous. They also have the Rodrigo Garro coming in from Talleres in Argentina. Who they really need to be banking on. Rojas needs to step up. They've got some pieces. They've got some really nice young kids as well, Wesley, Giovanni. But they've gotta arrange their pieces in a manner that is effective. And yeah, you've mentioned some of their older players, Juliano, Gil, performing for Santos. But the whole idea was that they would kind of cut some of the dead wood and bring in new blood. Whereas it seems like there's still some dead wood. You mentioned Cassio. He's been performing really poorly lately. And Fagner as well. He's about as old as dirt these days, and just hasn't looked up to it. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that squad.
Exactly, Peter. And I think what they're going through at the moment is maybe due to their presidency ever since he came onto the club. I remember when the elections were made, Corinthians actually lost 5-1 in Neoquímica against Bahia. And you would think that a new manager would fix things just like it's been working out for Santos. But for Corinthians, it's been completely opposite. Having trouble in Serie A to in December of last year, having trouble in the Paulista, firing their manager, selling some of their big players, which I don't really know why, like Gil and Juliano. I can't believe how Santos actually got those two guys. Gil actually was crucial in many matches in the Sudamericana that they played last season. And then you have players like Yuri that don't really contribute to the team, and the fans are unhappy, the signings aren't there, and Lucas Verissimo also called or said something about the president before moving to Al Duhalil. So, yeah, things have been going very wrong for the Paulista team, and I don't know what or where they're going to go there from this moment.
Yeah, I'm glad you also mentioned Verissimo. I keep meaning to bring it up. He had contract disputes, and basically there's two sort of sides to the story where in each Verissimo side and the club president, I believe his name is Augusto Melo, both have kind of mutually exclusive stories about how this deal went down, and it just went up in smoke. And as a result, Verissimo went and joined Felipe Coutinho in Qatar, in the Qatar Stars League, I believe it's called. But we already talked about the Clásico, Santos beating Corinthians 1-0. Henrik, I told you before this, it was the first time I watched Santos from the first minute to the 90th minute this season, and I was impressed. I think they really have been improved in terms of their squad, in terms of their defensive organization, and in terms of their mentality. These are players with their heads held up high, despite how many times Hanyele was symbolizing the A to the crowd. They're proud players, and I really appreciated that effort. I think they could have made it a lot worse on for Corinthians. It could have been 2-3, goals scored, but really impressed with that. And again, the thing that stood out to me was that defensive line. Carrile has come in, done a great job organizing it, but Gil standing tall, pairing with Joaquim seamlessly, and the outside backs as well. Alderlan from Red Bull Bragantino has been incredible, and Heiner as well from, I think it's Azurzis, a smaller Brazilian club in the south. But Wow, just a total night and day difference.
Yeah, Santos has been completely different comparing the last season and this season. And you would think that after one, two, three games, they would struggle. Of course, they did that against Palmeiras, they lost. But again, they got back in track. They won against Agua Santa away from home. We keep getting those 1-0 victories, but they get the job done. We get the 3 points, and that's all we basically need. We don't need to win 3-1, 4-0, and then get embarrassed just like we did last season to a team like America away from home or Cuiabá. So as long as we're winning or drawing matches that we should draw, I think I'm very happy. You mentioned Janier, a player that excelled during the match against Agua Santa. Joaquim and Gil, two great center backs, form a spectacular duo. And then on the right, you mentioned Adrián. So whenever Adrián isn't playing, Janier plays. And if Felipe Jonathan on the left doesn't play, and then one of those right backs actually goes to the left, it's actually sad that Kjævesson got injured. Of course, a player that I don't really enjoy watching, but looking at the situation of Santos, we need players fit for every match. So we're going to be left with only one player in that left back position for a little while. It seems like the injury that he had a couple days ago is serious, so he might need to go through surgery. But yeah, everything has been solid. I like how Carilli changed the formation after the loss against Palmeiras from a 4-3-3 to a 4-4-2. And originally, I thought it wasn't going to work out, but based on what I've been seeing in the last two matches, it is working out. So Santos is getting the goals, we're getting the victories, and we're getting the 3 points.
Yeah, absolutely. I was also impressed by Otero as well. He is very decent signing, I think. And even Alfredo Morelos, much maligned by a lot of Rangers fans in my comments, but he's got an assist already in the Paulista, and kind of like what he's been able to do. Technical player. Can't wait for him to score his first goal. I think it's coming soon. So really excited to see that. Now, the other three teams. Because I think Paulista now definitely has a big five. Red Bull Bragantino, don't really know what to make of them yet. They haven't really been tested. 1-0 loss to Palmeiras has really been their only competitive match, but they've done well otherwise. Palmeiras, again, kind of question mark in my mind. They've got to get back the Endrickey and their full squad, integrate new signings, Moreno. And we'll see what Abel Ferreira has up his sleeve. I wouldn't put too much stock in the loss to Sao Paulo. I think they're still going to be probably in the final of the Paulista and probably up there in the table. São Bernardo as well. I want to just shout them out before we talk about Sao Paulo. Probably the best of the rest. Once again, São Bernardo, spearheaded last year by Christian Barletta. But again, looking pretty decent this year. But São Paulo are the team that everyone's talking about. Checo Carpini has got them firing on all cylinders. They are looking great. They've got the Brazilian Super Cup already under their belt, and they'll be gunning for another Paulista. So we've already talked about São Paulo a little bit, but Palmeiras, Red Bull Braga, and any other team in the Paulista, any comments on them?
Well, all of those teams are again teams that we have been seeing that they've been playing very well in the state championships, but you never know what can happen in the future. So I think we've had 6 match weeks so far. We have 6 more to go, so we're basically halfway through. So any team, even Corinthians currently in the 16th spot or 15th spot, who knows, maybe they're going to end up fifth or fourth in the table, in the overall table, because just like we saw Vasco da Gama change up gears at the end of last season, anything can happen, especially when playing with sides that don't even compete in the top four divisions in Brazil. So yeah, anything can happen. And I expect Santos Palmeiras semifinal, because that's how it's meant to be, Group A versus Group B in the semifinals. So and then looking at our group respectively, where we are located, I believe, with Ituano, Portuguesa, and another team, things are looking good for us. six games in, 15 points. So even if we lose the next two or three, we're still going to be first. So at least we're not in the situation that we've been in the last 2 or 3 years.
Yep, very, very true. And also, before we move on to Rio de Janeiro, worth noting, Santos have 15 points right now. In all of last year, so the 12 group matches, Santos had 14, finished with 14 points. So they're already better than last year with half the matches. I mean, just again, don't need to keep saying it, but night and day. All right, Carioca, Campeonato Carioca, the Rio de Janeiro State Tournament. Of course, we've got the big four in this state: Vasco, Flamengo, Fluminense, and Botafogo. And we had two clásicos to talk about. Vasco and Flamengo ended nil-nil, and Flamengo and Botafogo almost ended nil-nil. But Leo Pereira had something to say about that last-minute winning goal to give Flamengo the win. What is your impression of the Big Four in Rio and the Campeonato Carioca so far?
Well, Campeonato Carioca, again, the big four are the teams that are expected to win one of those four teams as in every year, unless there's a surprise like Madureira ending up second or third and reaching the next stages. But I gotta say, Botafogo have not been promising this season. They started the year well by winning a couple of games, especially 1-0, 2-0, but then the third match in, they lost away to Boa Vista, and then this loss against Flamengo is their second loss. They also have two draws at home, so yeah, things have not been promising. They thought that the team got away from the mistakes that they did last season, but it seems like, just like I mentioned in the beginning of the podcast, they're back, conceding in the 90th minute a goal that will change the fate of the amount of points they would end up the match with, is a factor that terrifies for Botafogo fans. So hopefully, they can reach the next stage that they failed to reach last year. And I would like to see those four teams again play against each other. And so far, I think Flamengo is the favorites to win it, even Fluminense. They won it last year. I believe they won it in 2022 as well. I don't think they're going to go 3 years in a row. They need a new champion, and Flamengo seems like the perfect team to do it so far.
Yeah, I think Flamengo by far look the most dangerous. When you look at the additions they've made, I think I would fear them the most. Fluminense are sitting top right now. I think five wins in six matches, a draw as well. So Flamengo are definitely going to be shooting to take down Fluminense most of all. Vasco and Botafogo, they're stuttering, like you said, big question marks. They don't, I think, have their squads totally constructed how they want. Vasco, of course, not doing that well last year. Of course, they had a solid end to their season, but they really only avoided relegation by the skin of their teeth and the breast of their owl. Botafogo, again, still reeling from last year. So, two teams with a lot of question marks, and I think even after these first six games in Carioca, we've still got more questions than answers. But it's going to be interesting. Now, I also want to mention Nova Iguaçu, kind of a no-name team. I've heard you mention their name before. Actually, sitting in second, and they defeated Botafogo. They've scored more goals than Flamengo, I'm wondering if they could be this year's Volta Redondo. Kind of that second rung of teams in the Carioca that might, give a game or two to the Big Four. And they already have to Botafogo getting that win. So, kind of another little interesting shout out. And also, we want to talk about Vasco for a second. They're playing, or they just played Audax Rio in Manaus. The metropolis of the Amazon, really the only big city in the Amazon rainforest. And it's really cool to see Vasco and Flamengo, Corinthians, these big teams have huge fan bases all over Brazil. We saw Vasco and Flamengo play, I believe, at Mana Garrincha in Brasilia. And it's just awesome to see these huge clubs travel around the country and go to these cities where they have massive support. And a lot of these cities, probably people in Europe, North America, don't even know exist, maybe elsewhere in South America. So I spent a portion of my morning learning about Manaus and the beautiful stadium that they play in that was built for the 2014 World Cup, and doesn't get a lot of use these days. So I'm glad that they were able to pack a lot of fans in there, hopefully make a lot of money for both the local economy and for the club, and use that gorgeous stadium because it's definitely cool. And it also reminded me, first time in a long time that Amazonas will have their one of their teams in the top two divisions, Serie B. Amazonas FC, I believe are their names, is their name, are going to be in Serie B. They'll play Santos. They have a great badge, relatively new club. I know you've talked about them before as well. Two promotions in a row, if I'm not mistaken. So really interesting stuff there. And I think it's awesome that Vasco are going over there and playing in that stadium.
Yeah, it really is, because those teams, we keep hearing from many of the guests that we've had in the podcast saying that back then Flamengo and other teams in Brazil are teams that were streamed in live TV and radio a lot. So why not give those fans that have never had an opportunity to watch their favorite match, your favorite team play, watch it up close? And I believe Amazonas is the perfect place to do it. Of course, I know what stadium you're talking about. I have it envisioned in front of my head. And back then, when the 2014 World Cup was played, I always wanted to see matches played in that stadium. I think back then was my favorite stadium, even ahead of Maracanã. So it's going to be cool. And we're also going to have an opportunity to play there against Amazonas in Serie B soon. So I hope Amazonas, talking about them, can get promoted to Serie A alongside Santos and see some surprises in 2025.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Actually, I believe the US played there in the group stage. I forget who. Oh, I think it was the 2-2 with Portugal, or was that more recent? I can't remember. But yeah, that was the US, I do believe, played there, as did England. But yeah, all right. So moving on, let's talk on the two other big state championships, although big I'd put in quotations. Gaúcho, still going on. Gremio Inter, it's probably going to be the final. If not, it's going to be a snooze fest. Match day 10 is the Grenal, the first Grenal of the season. And I'm really just waiting for that. Both teams doing decently well in their respective tables, or if they're stumbling every now and again, they'll definitely make it to the semifinals and the final. So not a whole lot to say, except for Gremio just signed today Diego Costa, formerly of Botafogo, Atlético Mineiro, Atlético Madrid, Chelsea. Just an absolute journeyman, and some would say goon. But he does sign, and he's definitely not going to be the replacement for Suarez, but. I think he could chip in and definitely get under the opponent's skin. Any comments on the Gaúcho, Gremio, Diego Costa, any of that?
Yeah, talking about Gremio, I don't know why, but something about them doesn't convince me this year. Of course, last season, I was the one who actually surprised you and maybe many people listening here that Gremio, coming from Serie B, they're going to play very well in the Campeonato Brasileiro, which they did. They ended up third or fourth. But ever since Suárez left, I think that the team needs an actual striker. They have João Pedro, former Santos player that also played for Cagliari, I think, in Italy. But after that, I mean, they bought Soteldo, or they loaned Soteldo. He's out injured, so he's probably going to miss more than half of the season. And now I'm signing Diego Costa. I mean, come on, Diego Costa couldn't do anything for Botafogo. What is he going to do for the Gaúchos? But I hope, just like you said, we see an Inter Grammy final. If not, maybe Juventude can replace one of those teams. So yeah, not too much expectations from Gremio. So Internacional might have their big years, and just like Laza said last episode, maybe Internacional can win the Brasileirão.
And he teased the information about Lázaro as well, joining Palmeiras on loan from Almeria. He was right about that, and so we're going to be waiting, and come December we'll see if he's right about Internacional. The other championship, Campeonato Mineiro, again, kind of a yawn fest here. Atlético Mineiro, not the best start. They've been kind of lackluster. I think they'll get the wheels moving. I really think that this team could be something special. I don't love Eduardo Cude, but when you look at the squad, traditionally, I think Brazil has had this Big 12. But in modern Brazil, at least in the last few years, I really think there's kind of been a big three: Palmeiras, Flamengo, Atletico Mineiro. And I think when you look at the squads, definitely those three squads stand out. And with the addition of Gustavo Scarpa, I think they're definitely going to be up there challenging for the title this year. So they'll come around. Cruzeiro, again, not really sure what to make of them. But I'm sure they'll probably be in or around the final. América Mineiro as well, in the mix. But anything you want to say on the Campeonato Mineiro?
Yeah, I mean, the predictions that we had last week, I believe, weren't the greatest, with Cruzeiro playing Atlético Mineiro. It didn't end well for Atlético. I think similar to the story that we saw in the Brasileirão, where Atlético scored an own goal in the 95th minute and lost 1-0. It was pretty much, I believe, the same thing here, conceding in the 80th, and then again a second goal in the added time. So not looking good for Atlético Mineiro. I think just recently, before we started recording, they won 2-0 away from home against Athletic Club, a team that they were able to beat last year in the semifinals and struggled for a bit. So maybe Atlético Mineiro doesn't seem like one of the best teams in their respective state, but America seems like a rival that, despite being in Serie B, they might cause some harms to both Cruzeiro and Gallos.
All right, so state tournaments lumbering on. We always talk about this type of year, or this time of year, that it can be a bit tedious. So hopefully we're not boring you too much, and we're not just droning on about this stuff, because it does provide an interesting sight into new players, new teams that you might not know, and an interesting view on these teams as they form. Because really, technically, this is more or less still preseason. These are not the complete teams that we'll be seeing, come August, come September, when the main competitions really get underway. So it's an interesting look, but it can get tedious. All right, let's go to the pre-Olympic tournament, the Pre-Olimpico. It's the final stage. Brazil actually topped their group in the first stage. The second stage is a group of four. Each team plays each other once, and then the top two qualify for the Olympics. And Brazil shocked in the first game, 1-0 loss to Paraguay. Pretty interesting stuff there. Paraguay sitting top of the final phase group right now, a win and a draw. And Brazil, I think, really caught off guard by that. And just before we finished re or started recording, Brazil escaped with a really dramatic 2-1 win over Venezuela to keep the hopes alive. At one point, it looked like Venezuela went up 2-1, but the goal was taken back. And Guilherme Biro, one of the lone bright spots. We talk about so much doom and gloom for Corinthians, but one of the lone bright spots. Biro for Corinthians at this tournament scores an 88th minute goal to give Brazil the win. Endrick, beautiful pass on that as well. And they're back in it. And who do they face in their final game? The age-old rival, Argentina. So it's all on the line. I think they need at least a draw to progress to the Olympics. But really fascinating tournament. And this under-23 team, a lot of star power, a lot of names, Not sure if it's really jiving, so to speak, in this tournament. But man, the potential there is just crazy.
Yeah, definitely. And some players that we actually are seeing in these pre-Olympic matches are players that maybe not in 2026, but in 2030 World Cup, they're going to be starters. So hopefully most of those guys make it. And looking back at the group, Brazil with not a really good situation to be in. They play a huge rival, a team that I believe was in the final of the World Cup just a couple months ago and might have actually won it against Argentina or against Germany. So if we manage to get a draw, it's still going to be unsure of if we're going to proceed or not, because if Venezuela wins against Paraguay by two or more goals and we draw that match, then Paraguay and Venezuela would advance and both Brazil and Argentina would fail to do so. So this would be embarrassing for the sport with both of these teams not participating. So hopefully Brazil gets the job done in Caracas on Sunday, and a win there would mean that we would play in the Olympics. So hopefully some great action, and maybe the Brazil national team can bring the glory back and win it for the first time since 2016.
Yeah, that was awesome when they won it. I remember very well watching that penalty shootout and Neymar taking up the last penalty, and my dad just said, "Wow, that was like a movie." And it really was. Talk about it, completing the Infinity Stones. Brazil had never won the gold medal, and they did it there. When you think about that team, Gabriel Jesus, Gabriel Barbosa, like it was a pretty interesting team. Luan as well. And you just think of all the trajectories of all those careers going off in different directions. Pretty interesting. Argentina also scare me. Thiago Almada from Atlanta United is on that team, and he's the top goal scorer of the competition with 5 goals. So it'll be a really interesting match. Let's go Seleção. All right, Enric. We've got one last topic, and it's a bit of a fun, weird topic. We mostly keep it within Brazil. We had a lot of episodes about the World Cup, I think, if people remember in Qatar. But this one's kind of a weird one. News broke today that IFAB, the organization that mandates the laws of the game, they're trialing something called the blue card. Which is going to be used with the red and the yellow, using it for dissent and something else as well. Cynical fouls, I think, is how they put it. And what it's going to basically entail is a 10-minute stay in the sin bin or the penalty box, depending on however you want to call it, before the team gets their player back. And as a hockey fan, as a North American, and maybe if you're in Russia or in the Nordics, you're a hockey fan as well. This is nothing new. This is very normal. Player goes to the penalty box. The other team's on a power play. Same thing with lacrosse. You go man up. But it's kind of a weird concept for football and soccer. Curious to hear your thoughts on this. Instinctively, I dislike changes to the game, especially such a drastic one. And I'm sure that we've got to war game this out so it doesn't completely change the nature of the game. But on the other side of my brain, I'm thinking this could be a nice solution to punish players for offenses that may not deserve a second yellow, the first yellow, or to punish players for talking back or do different things. So, I'm kind of split. I'd really like to see how this trial goes. I'm trying to keep an open mind, but again, instinctively, I dislike dramatic changes to the rules such as this.
Yeah, and they always come up with changes that they say they're gonna do, but actually at the end, nothing changes. They were talking about a potential orange card a couple months ago, which would be a between a yellow and a red, but then wouldn't that confuse the referee of which card he's gonna give? So maybe he would give an orange card to a foul that would have been a yellow and could have given a yellow to a foul that could have been an orange card. So Everything would be even more confusing. The players would be frustrated, and we could see things that we didn't expect. And going to the blue card, that I like it for the fact that it would punish players from pretending that they were fouled. I read something that said that they would go away from the pitch for 10 minutes, not that they would stay in the penalty box. And maybe this is something that I can ask you. Is it opponent's penalty box or their own penalty box? Because if it's their own, then I think it's a good idea because they could stay defending. But if they're at their opponent's, then what's the point of doing that? Because he's going to be offside for any play during that match. And one thing that I would like to also end or say is that they said that they're going to test this out not in the top five leagues. So they always seem like to do those things on small competitions, maybe in the Brasileirão, which I'm not really a fan of. Why, whoever invented this is someone from the top nations in Europe. So why not test it in the Premier League, test it in the big leagues, and then see how it proceeds from there, and then move to all over the Europe and all over the world. So it's like that test that they would do to like sick people back in the World War and things that I don't really agree with.
Yeah, so I just want to clarify here. So the concept of the sin bin, or and this is where some of the lexicon gets confusing. It's called a penalty box in hockey, but you're right. No, it's not the penalty box that we know on the field. It's a separate area outside of the boundaries of the active field that they call the sin bin, I guess. But in hockey, you would call it the penalty box. So they'd be off the field completely. And as for the testing, I don't really think it's going to be in professional leagues, right? So I don't even think, if it's not going to be in the, North Macedonian League and not the Premier League, I think it's going to be in the grassroots games lower down the pyramid across many countries. And that's where they're really going to be trialing it. So yeah, I totally take all of what you're saying, and I do think it's an interesting thing to kind of combat. One of the things that a lot of Americans hate about the sport is the diving. And to be honest, it really annoys me, or it used to annoy me, and sometimes it still does. The cynicism of some of these players and how it's become part of the game. Something that really gets under my skin, and it just looks so ridiculous on screen, and it is ridiculous. Everyone knows this is ridiculous, and it's this elaborate charade that everyone just puts up with because it's part of the game. And it's just one of those frustrating things. It's a quirk. All sports have them. So it's nothing to get too worked up about, but I do like this idea as a way of combating things like that without actually giving the yellow card, where a yellow card could really influence the game, although I'm pretty sure I haven't looked too closely at the combinations, but I think a blue and a yellow might also equal a red, or there's other combinations that are in play. So it's an interesting idea. It's really got to be war gamed out, because there's a lot that can go wrong, and I've seen some scenarios on Twitter that people are, getting how many blue cards can you rack up? How many men down can you be? Yeah, it's an interesting idea, and I think it's trying to tackle a problem that needs to be addressed, but I don't know if this is the solution. But we'll have to wait and see. All right, well, with that, let's go ahead and end the episode. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Especially if you made it this far, it really means a lot. State championships can be a little bit tedious, as I mentioned earlier. So, really appreciate it. We will be back very soon with a brand new episode. And if you missed it last time, we interviewed Rodrigo Lazzarini, Brasileirão play commentator, journalist extraordinaire. And it was a great interview because he's a passionate Palmeiras fan. So, go check that out in the meantime. Other than that, have a great night.